It is Wednesday, August 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Central Italy is struck with a strong earthquake. An attack is underway at the American University in Kabul, Afghanistan. Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is criticized for her work with the Clinton Foundation. And the music group The Chainsmokers climbs the charts. It's all ahead. Italian media say a strong earthquake shook central Italy early Wednesday morning, causing extensive damage to three cities near the epicenter and killing at least 73 people, including children. The U.S. Geological Survey put the magnitude at 6.2 with an epicenter at about 10 kilometers southeast of the town of Norcia. I spoke with VOA's Jamie Detmer, who's in Montefiore del Asso near the affected region.
So far, we know that three villages, at least, all three were to the southeast of Norcia, which had the, which was at the epicenter, had been severely damaged. One or two, people are talking about having been leveled. None of the big cities so far have suffered any extensive damage, but this tremor at 3:36, which was, you know, variously reported between 6.2 and 6.4 on the Richter scale, was felt as far north as Bologna, even further, actually, down in Rome and south of Rome as well. We're getting considerable number of aftershocks, so about 80 have been reported across the country. Where I am in Montefiore at Del Asso, which is a village just off the Adriatic coast, about 115 kilometers from the epicenter, as well as the big jolt at 3:36, which lasted for nearly 30 seconds, we felt three or four other jolts as well, couple lasting about 20 seconds.
Well, since this area is near the Adriatic coast, are there a lot of tourists there at this time?
There are quite a few Italian tourists. It's running towards the end of the season. I'm staying at a hotel I've been at before, Hotel Magnolia, a beautiful hotel above a picturesque valley which runs into the Adriatic. Most of the guests here, most of the guests we've seen in the villages around are Italians. It's towards the end of the summer. So most of the North European families have disappeared. Obviously, they've got kids going back to school. So it's towards the end of the season. There's many Italian holidaymakers here.
Has the Italian military been involved in some of the recovery efforts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're using any services they can to try to get to the sites of the damage. I mean, obviously, there's nervousness because we've had so many after jolts that there could be some more big ones to come. Interestingly, since about Saturday, I'd noticed when I was looking at an earthquake tracker last night, we all left the hotel after the first shock as a precaution in case there were more to come. The hotel stood up magnificently to the jolt. But there'd been a series of slight tremors really since Saturday, Sunday, Monday. On the tracker, there had been some other much smaller jolts that no one really had felt virtually every day. So there was some kind of pattern leading up to this.
Is this area, I believe this area is on a fault?
Yes, of course it is. And, of course, there's a lot of concern about six, 7 years ago, 2009, at L'Aquila, which is a big city in central Italy as well, that got tremendously hammered by an earthquake. We seem to be getting in central Italy, in the provinces of Umbria, Marche, Lazio, an earthquake about every 3 or 4 years. There was another big one about 3 years ago in the Abruzzi, another central province of Italy.
What about any international efforts to assist the people affected by this earthquake? Have you seen any of that?
I haven't heard of any yet. I mean, I think the Italians have got it under control at this stage. I'm sure they won't say no to any help particularly, but I mean, we are in the early hours after the initial big trembler. And so they're trying also to assess damage. I mean, there's been some natural damage as well. The Gran Sasso, which is part of a mountain range in the middle of Italy, apparently some rock has fallen down from there. So there's concern also about those mountains as well as, obviously, habitations.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That's VOA's Jamie Detmer in Italy. Time now to check out what's buzzing online. Our social media reporter G. Abby Lee joins me here in Studio 22. Hi, G.
Hi, Sarah.
Well, let's begin with Italy. What's the latest?
So like we just heard, at least 73 people died after a 6.2 magnitude earthquake in Amatrice and a 5.5 magnitude quake near Norcia.
And what's the online reaction like?
The overwhelming response is that of asking prayers for the victims and their families. But some people argued online that American TV stations devoted too much airtime to the Italy quakes and not enough airtime to the flooding in Louisiana. Some commenters also pointed out prayers will be flooding in because it happened in Europe and not in a developing country. Hashtag Pray for Italy is trending at this hour, using more than 245,000 tweets so far.
I see. And what about the explosion in Kabul? We have more on the topic later on in the program, but let's check out the social media reaction first.
Sure. So the most prominent Twitter user in this case is AP photographer Masoud Hosseini. The Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer appears to be trapped inside the American University of Afghanistan in Kabul, along with other faculty members and hundreds of students. He is on Twitter at Masoud151 and sent out this tweet. Help, we are stuck inside AUAF, that's the university's name, shooting followed by explosion. This may be my last tweet. Within an hour, more than 1,000 people retweeted that, but just before our show began, that tweet became unavailable. I'm not sure as to why just yet, but it's quite concerning because, you know, that tweet was deleted without an explanation, but in one sense, he has access to his phone and the Twitter account, so maybe that's the comforting aspect of it. What do you think?
I don't know. Yeah. Perhaps.
It's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah. Any other trending stories online?
Sure. Conservative radio host Rush Limbaugh is trending online after he argued that President Obama is encouraging lesbians to become farmers to quote-unquote attack certain states. He said the Obama administration is trying to convince lesbians to become farmers through financial grants to bust up one of the last geographically conservative regions in the U.S. That's all for me today. Sarah?
Well, thank you for the wrap-up, G. Tweet us your comments and questions at VOA_IE. You can also find me and G on Twitter at VOA Williams and G at G Abby Lee. Here are some of the top stories trending. One person is killed in Kashmir as the Indian Home Minister visits the region. A 6.8 magnitude earthquake hits Myanmar. The U.S. backs anti-corruption organizations in Nigeria, and the U.S. rebuffs a Turkish demand for the immediate return of a cleric. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
For years, astronomers have been examining the skies with radio telescopes, searching for any signs of extraterrestrial intelligence, or ETI. Scanning UHF radio frequencies, scientists carefully listen for any distinctive signal that might emerge from the background noise. Lately, scientists are using lower frequencies, between 80 to 300 megahertz, to look for ETI. The Murchison Wide Field Array, or MWA, radio telescope, located in Western Australia, has been built to specifically hunt for ETI signals in this frequency range. Initial observations of a small piece of the sky and a limited range of frequencies yielded no ETI signals. But the scientists are planning future observations that will cover the full sky at the full frequency range. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear the latest hit from the group The Chainsmokers. Afghan officials say the American University in Kabul has come under attack by unknown militants, trapping scores of students and teachers inside. The number of attackers involved remains unclear. Officials have described the assault as a complex attack. Afghanistan's health ministry says at least 14 people were wounded, including one female, and they've been sent to local hospitals. International Edition's Peter Heinlein talked with reporter Suna Rasmussen at the scene.
Yeah, well, I'm outside the university now, and there's no real sound coming from inside the campus. They're about to conduct an operation, according to the security forces here. Security forces are searching for attackers inside the university. I've spoken to some people who were there when the attack happened. They say there are several badly injured people inside, apparently. According to the emergency hospital in town, that's the preeminent hospital for war wounded in Kabul, they've only received 5 wounded people so far. But that could be because everyone is trapped inside. A lot of people are trapped inside the university. So I think we should expect the casualty numbers to rise as the evening carries on.
There was one report that there may be only one attacker, but now it appears that there may be more. Do you know anything?
No, I don't know any details. I'm not even sure the security force know the details. They're still searching for the attackers. And I think at this point, we should probably be careful about speculating too much about how many attackers are inside. What I can say is with this type of complex attacks, normally it starts with an explosion like this one, often with the suicide bomber, and then you will have numerous attackers following up. But we don't know anything at this point.
Now, we did have a report that there were some journalists inside, but you say that the Associated Press has reported all its people are okay. Do you have any late information on that?
No. What I know is an Associated Press photographer was tweeting from inside the university at one point that he was trapped. He's one of many students at the university. He sort of fits that around his busy work schedule. But later, the bureau chief in town for AP said that all their staff were safe.
That's reporter Suna Rasmussen in Kabul, Afghanistan. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump this week demanded an independent special prosecutor be appointed to investigate connections between the Clinton Foundation. And this was founded by his Democratic rival Hillary Clinton and her husband to promote charitable ventures throughout the world and the State Department she headed from 2009 to 2013. Emails have surfaced showing that foundation officials often asked Hillary Clinton's top aides to connect the foundation's biggest donors with key officials at the State Department. Jeffrey Skelly is a political analyst at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. I asked him about this latest Clinton controversy.
I think you're going to need some really smoking gun kind of revelations here, because at the end of the day, I mean, your average politician or political figure, I mean, they meet with people who donate money to their campaigns. And the difference here, of course, I guess, is that the Clinton Foundation is not a political entity, but it's still an entity involving money. So I guess, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not all that shocked. Not that I'm saying that how they've handled it was necessarily right, or even, you know, that kind of access is right. But it's something that I don't think surprises anyone necessarily. But, you know, it's one of those things where the AP report really spoke to sort of a fundamental problem for Hillary Clinton and the Clintons in general. It said that it appeared that they hadn't broken the rules of the legal agreement that they signed when she took over as Secretary of State in 2009 in terms of how they would handle this relationship, the fact that there was a Clinton Foundation, but you also had Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. But, of course, it looks like these circumstances could create potential conflicts of interest, that there was influence peddling. I mean, all of this, you know, it looks bad and really does go along with very much a narrative about the Clintons that we've seen, you know, just kind of confirmed over and over again.
Well, so far, Secretary Clinton has handled this by going on, you know, a late night TV show and sort of joking about some of this stuff. But she has not held a news conference in several months, and I don't think has done a sort of in-depth one-on-one interview with any major media at this point about this.
Yeah, both candidates really have sort of failed on the question of media access in terms of being available to press avails. I mean, you have the Trump campaign not allowing some news outlets to cover them, to even, you know, attend as journalists with journalistic credentials. And the Clinton campaign, she hasn't, you know, held a formal press avail for that, you know, incredible period of time. There's just a lot of avoidance going on in terms of, especially on the Clinton side, of questions, of really in-depth questioning of all this. And you wonder if in some ways it's been an overly defensive move. It's understandable, I guess, after, you know, decades in the political limelight to have this very defensive posture toward, you know, a scandal involving your family and you as a politician if you're Hillary Clinton. Obviously, the Clintons have suffered through this quite a bit over the years, whether rightly or wrongly. So I guess the defensive posture is understandable, but there is something to the idea that if you really took a long, like a long press avail on this, a long press conference, and just dealt with every question, I mean, it almost would be reminiscent in some way of the Benghazi hearing where Clinton sat in there and answered questions for hours. Considering how she handled that, maybe she could have taken a similar, made a similar move here, and it might have, you know, might have lowered the temperature a bit on this issue.
Jeffrey Skelly of the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. A new group is rocketing up the music charts. Here to tell me about it is VOA's Border Crossings host, Larry London.
Well, right now, Sarah, the in trend is something called EDM, electronic dance music. And if you look at the charts, it's filled with these electronic producer DJ types like David Guetta, Calvin Harris, who Forbes says was the top DJ and money-making DJ, $63 million this past year.
So not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Big business there. And there's a whole bunch of others, you know, Zedd and Diplo and Major Lazer are on the rise. They're at number two on the charts with the song with Justin Bieber these days. The Chainsmokers. That's the name of today's group, The Chainsmokers, which is an American duo for a change. Usually these groups are from Europe. But this time around, it's the American team of Andrew Taggart and Alex Paul, and they decided to form this electronic dance music thing they call the Chainsmokers. In 2011, of all things, they recorded a song. Their very first song was with an Indian actress, Priyanka Chopra. It was a song called Erase. It did okay. Did better in India, obviously, than it did in the United States. But right after that, they released a song called Selfie that did put them on the map and establish themselves, you know, riding on the trend of social media and everybody taking their cell phone out and taking selfies. Mm-hmm. And then they followed that up with a whole bunch of other songs and an EP called Bouquet. Right now, they're number one on the charts. They are the new number one act with the new number one song, and that's called Closer. And they don't even have a new album for it. It's just a single, but it's number one. So let's listen.
Look as good as the day I met you. I forget just why I left you. I was insane. Stay and play that Blink 182 song. That would beat to death in Tucson. Okay.
So eventually, will there be an album around this then?
That's the hope. But they've released a bunch of singles. And that seems to be the way that these electronic dance music producers do, is they release singles, they release mixtapes, they do anything except studio albums. The trend in the industry now is going away from albums because it's hard to sell albums right now. Mm-hmm. With everybody being able to go to Spotify or iTunes and buy one song at a time, you know, the idea of a $15 or $20 album is hard to sell these days. So that's where it's, you know, difficult unless you're a Taylor Swift or an Adele. But the Chainsmokers are doing well, and the song features a young 21-year-old New Jersey singer named Halsey. That's not a real name. She's Italian. Her real name is Ashley Frangipani. But she goes by Halsey, and she's another singer on the rise. She does the vocals for the song we just heard, Closer. And her debut album came out last year called Badlands. Not doing as well as Chainsmokers are doing right now. They're both on tour. They're both performing at various different festivals throughout the country. And that seems to be the current trend, electronic dance music. Who knows how long we'll ride that wave, but that's where it's at right now.
And where are the Chainsmokers from?
Those two guys are both from New York, okay. New York City. And they recorded most of their albums and their music in New York City.
Thanks very much. That's Larry London. He is host of VOA's Border Crossings. That's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Religious freedom remains a concern in China. According to the recently released 2015 State Department International Religious Freedom Report, the Chinese government continued to exercise state control over the practice of religion. Over this past year, reports continued to surface that the government physically abused, detained, arrested, tortured, incarcerated, or harassed adherents of both registered and unregistered religious groups for activities related to their beliefs and practices. Human rights organizations stated that police shot and killed Uyghur Muslims during house raids and protests after the introduction of stricter government controls on religious expression and practice in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. A Falun Gong group reported abductions, detention, and a death in police custody related to adherents' belief and practices. According to media and non-governmental reports, seven Tibetans self-immolated during the year in protest of restrictive government policies. Authorities often justified official scrutiny of Tibetan Buddhist monasteries by associating expression of Tibetan Buddhist faith with separatism and pro-independence activities. According to NGO and press reports, authorities in Zhejiang province ordered the removal of more than 105,000 crosses on Christian churches and the demolition of some church buildings as part of a campaign against illegal structures. Many Zhejiang pastors and congregants openly resisted the campaign, resulting in the detention of several church leaders and activists, including Pastor Huang Yizi and lawyer Zhang Kai. Local authorities in many areas used a variety of means to punish members of unregistered religious or spiritual groups, including Christian house churches. Authorities in Guangdong province sentenced Buddhist leader Wu Zeheng to life in prison on what advocacy groups stated were politically motivated charges. As a signatory of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, China made a commitment to respect the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. When a government denies religious liberty, it turns citizens who have done nothing wrong into criminals, igniting tension that breeds contempt, hopelessness, and alienation, said Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken at the release of the 2015 International Religious Freedom Report. Deputy Secretary Blinken went on to say, religious pluralism shows respect for the beliefs of every citizen and gives each a tangible reason to contribute to the success of the entire society. That's why no nation can fulfill its potential if its people are denied the right to freely choose and openly practice their faith.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.